Patreon bonus episode. Today I'll be answering some of the questions I put up on the Patreon about my time recently in Ukraine, 3 months of the war, and about Hood's clan, the anti-fascist football hooligans have formed a militia that we've filmed with. So first question, someone said, did you get your wallet back? Basically, I left my wallet, so we had to get like a fucking 20-hour bus journey from Kiev back to Krakow after we were filming. And I left my wallet on the frigging bus. I left my coat up on the bus. I was kind of asleep when it stopped back in Krakow and had the, you know, I was like, get off quick, and I've just forgot the coat. The wallet was in the pocket. And then I was like, right, well, that's fucking gone, you know what I mean? So next day, someone messaged me on Instagram and was like, hi, did you leave your wallet on a bus from Ukraine? I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, my dad's the driver. Like, he found the wallet and told me to contact you. So I was like, legend. So basically, he was back in Ukraine at that point, come back to Poland, and he's posted it for me. So yeah, absolute legend. Really good people, thank God. So I've not got it back yet. Maybe it will arrive, maybe it won't do, but I fucking hope so. Next question. What's something different you see in this question now? Jesus. What's something different you see in this conflict now compared to other ones you've seen or before the conflict escalated? I think this level of like extreme flattening, total destruction, targeting of civilians is something that we've not seen in Europe for a long time, or at least in my lifetime that I can think. I mean, I know obviously the war has been going on in the east of Ukraine for like 8 years, but it was nothing like this, obviously. It wasn't this level at all, especially the targeting of civilians and like deliberate targeting of civilians, which we've seen on, you know, there's video evidence. Yeah, I think that is quite new to see in Europe. Honestly, like, there's certain parts of, we're in Borodanka, and there's certain parts that just look like, remind me a bit of Raqqa. Obviously, it's not that, quite that level, but it's just like, fuck me, like, whole apartment block flattened. So yeah, that was quite weird to see like that, you know? Yeah, I think that is kind of different. And like, yeah, like from before it escalated, it was just less people were aware of it. Like, it was almost like if you were in Kiev, no one really, after about 4 years, people would just sort of almost forgot about the war in the east. Even like people, like Ukrainians in Kiev, and now it's obviously everyone is fully aware. Like Kiev, it's sad to see it, but Kiev is for like fully militarized, sandbags everywhere, hedgehogs, barricades, you know, armed territorial defense everywhere. It's, yeah, so things have changed massively in that respect. Someone said, no question, just a shout out to Roman. Stay safe, y'all. I don't know who Roman is. Imagine it's someone in Hood's clan. Don't know. And the next question, a couple of questions, if that's okay. How do you see the war in Ukraine progressing? I think there's going to be another large-scale offensive from Russia. Possibly they'll come over the border from Belarus again, but like with the Belarusian military. I think they'll announce, maybe, you know, it's just more than a special operation. They'll just like confirm it is an all-out war, which obviously it is, but you know, I think there's some different legal parameters regarding the definition that the Russians have come up with when it comes to the you know, the conflict. Yeah, I think that's going to happen. I don't see it ending anytime soon, unfortunately. I think it's going to get more concentrated in the east. You know, Mariupol will almost definitely eventually fall, which, you know, that will be brutal. And then I think that's when we'll see more operations. Transnistria might be pulled into it. Yeah, all sorts of stuff. It's not going to look good. I don't know about Transnistria. Like, it's a funny old situation. I mean, I don't want to be all like, psyop this, psyop not. But it's a bit weird that, you know, you can't take a piss in Transnistria without being caught by the fucking FSB or their version of it. So I find it very hard to believe that partisans have managed to blow up things in there. And it just seems odd. I feel like something weird's going on, and I think that Russia might use that as a pretext to cause more problems there. And, you know, we've seen it with, if you read Litvinenko's book, Blowing Up Russia, you know, Putin, that's Putin's kind of 101. So it won't be that much of a surprise. Next question. What shocked you the most about this war? What shocked me the most? I think the speed at which the massacres just started happening, like, that was just mad. Like, you know, within 3 months, there's just video of, you know, civilians killed in the street with their hands bound, footage of Russian soldiers killing civilians, you know, just awful shit, man. Yeah, that was quite fast. And also, I think the level of, like, mobilisation, like, everyone and their nan, you know, is ready to fight, or at least do something to assist in the war effort. And that's really interesting. I think it really speaks to kind of Ukrainian culture as well, and how kind of important their level of, like, I guess, patriotism. I mean, it and nationalism. But at the end of the day, you know, you need some of that sometimes to make sure everyone comes together to do their part, to make sure your country doesn't get fragged. So, yeah, it's a tricky one. But, yeah, it's either way on the ground, it's fascinating to see. Next question. Has the way journalists are working in Ukraine changed since the first days and weeks of the invasion? Yeah, there's a lot of fucking cowboys turned up. Unfortunately, a lot of independent reporters that are just people fucking about on Instagram, basically putting themselves in extreme danger to post online. You've got these, like, hyper fucking narcissistic personality disorder type reporters that, you know, start every day like, kind of, you Kiev calling, we are resisting, we are the force. Like, you're meant to be a fucking reporter, not like a Viking. Like, what is wrong with you? You know, that kind of bullshit. Unfortunately, you know, Ukraine has become a quite easy breeding ground for narcissists. We went to a bar on the last day in Kiev, and there's loads of, like, foreign volunteers in there wearing the fucking uniform, and not fighting or doing anything. It's like, what? It's really funny. A friend of mine that's over there, that's volunteering, that's, you know, fought previously in Rojava, was with him, and he was like, why the fuck are these volunteers wearing their uniform in a bar? And I was like, yeah, like, these people are fucking just disgraceful. But there's a lot of that, unfortunately. But you see that in any war. But I think because it's Ukraine, it's a lot closer for a lot of people in Europe, so there's a lot more of that. And there's a lot more, like, we met some lad, I think he was from, like, Arkansas or something. He was just, like, he had no idea what the fuck he was doing. Like, all his uniform was too big. You know, he's extremely short, which, you know, doesn't mean you can't fight, but it was just very odd, the whole vibe. And I was like, man, this kid is not going to do well unless he's some kind of expert sniper. But he didn't really have the demeanor of an expert sniper. He was like, I was at the bar and he comes up to me, he's like, hey, what are you doing here? And I was like, I'm a reporter, sort of thing. Like, and he's like, oh, cool, I'm volunteering, I'm going to fight. And it's like, oh, fuck, man. Like, I don't think this guy is built for this, you know. Could be wrong. I'm not trying to gatekeep anyone's kind of resistance. But I just found it, stuff like that, just, you know, it's quite worrying, you know, because it's like, man, is he going to fall into place? Maybe. But he seemed extremely soft, you know, in a nice way. But, yeah, there's a lot of that going on. Yeah, and then a lot of, like, stupid journalists doing dumb shit. Yeah. How did you perceive the mood of people out there? Were they hopeful or did they seem scared? People seem, I mean, I was only in Kiev, like, but people seem kind of worried, but also very, like, kind of, we're past the point of no return now, fuck it, all out, let's go. You know what I mean? It's quite you can tell people have that feeling of, like, you know, let's go to the East, let's get them out, let's do it. You know, so be it. What can they do worse? You know, they've got us, they've done this to us. You know, just extreme violence, basically, all ahead just to get rid of them. And I think, you know, fair play to them. I'm not saying that, like, oh, yeah, violence is good, but this idea of, I keep seeing, oh, we just need peace now. It's like Russia invaded Ukraine and they're not going to leave. Just peace. What kind of peace would that mean? Would that mean Russia occupies the country? No, not really. You know, for them, they're like, no, we don't need peace. We need extreme levels of violence to clear them out, get rid of them. So, you know, it is what it is, and that's how it is. And I think a lot of people there just instinctively understand that, especially after Bucha, especially after Irpin and the massacres. You know, people are very much aware that, like, there is no going back now. And I think that's fair, you know, that's kind of the way it's got to be. It's very easy for a Westerner to be like, oh, just have peace now. And it's like, what does that look like for Ukrainians? You know, probably not good. Next question. How do the anti-fascist units get treated by the other units? Is there any discernible difference in treatment or attitude? From what I understand, like, pretty much they're fine. I mean, even like Azov and the neo-fascist militias, they have a level of like respect for at least their fighting sort of thing. And where like the way that, from what I understand, I mean, from what I've heard and what they've said, the way that like the kind of anti-fascist militias are like, right, put all differences aside for the moment because we've got a bigger enemy, let's fight Putin and Russia. The fascist ones have kind of done the same, from what I understand. There's some rumours that Azov have fired on foreign volunteers. I've not seen any evidence of that. It could be out there, but I've heard that. But generally, from what I understand, it's kind of a joint effort. I mean, it's not like they're comrades or anything like that, but they're just like, look, fuck it, here's the war. And in fact, Anton was like, we even have communication with some of like the fascists that we fought with before, just because, you know, it's a fucking war. We're going to be like, no, I'm not going to talk to them because I don't agree with them politically. It's like, no, it's a war. You have to cooperate, unfortunately, with, not even cooperate, just communicate with people you don't agree with politically or like at all. You know, in their case, people they've punched their fucking heads in, and now they have to deal with them, you know. He did tell us a really interesting story where their commander used to be a Nazi, and they're from Anton being like the main guy in Hood's clan, they're from Anton's town, the commander was, and Anton was like, yeah, like we attacked his guys like years and years and years ago. Like, you know, he's like, I would find them and just beat the shit out of them, like, because they're Nazis. And then he said, and then years after years, he found out that this commander got into like anti-fascist hardcore punk music, which was like a big thing for Hood's clan. And he, over like years and years, he changed his ideas and became an anti-fascist rather than a Nazi. And then now he's their commander. He's not in Hood's clan. He just happens to be like, you know, the commander of the TD unit, which they're a part of. So that's cool. He was like, nah, they're like, he's a good, and he seemed like a good enough guy. You know what I mean? So that, I thought that was really fascinating. Next question. No question, but I love the HHK takedown a couple months back when an American called them out as not being proper anarchists for wanting to save their country was excellent. Yeah, I mean, an American calling out a fucking group of Ukrainian militants fighting to save their country, it's irrelevant. Like, fuck them. You know what I mean? It's like, how that, I mean, an American anarchist telling them they're not real anarchists. I mean, the Hood's clan are not really even anarchists. They're some of them are, some of them aren't. They're just like, you know, Anton's not, he's like, I just want to beat up Nazis and enjoy my life. You know, that's his thing. He's not particularly invested in theory. He's a very intelligent guy and very clearly knows a lot of stuff. He took us to an actual monument near his hometown, which for a guy that he called, he's like considered the second next to Makhno. So I think Anton has like sympathies that way, but he's like, I'm not interested in getting all bogged down in that discourse. And I don't blame him, you know what I mean? Next question. How would you describe the support and help from the Russian anti-fascists / leftists? Yeah, a lot of the Russian anti-fascists, so-called anti-fascists, are pro-Putin, pro-invasion, and, you know, have been extremely backward in their traitorous, in my opinion, in their understandings of anti-fascism when it comes to the war in Ukraine. Some of them just, frankly, like outright Putinists now, you know, whilst claiming to be anti-fascist. So, yeah, it's pretty fucked up. I've seen a lot of that. There's a lot of Russian anti-fascists, though, that have come and joined the fight as well, so fair play to them, you know. But yeah, a lot of fascist kind of like movements within the so-called anti-fascist movements of Russia and in the West as well. Next question. After war, do you think they will continue the ultra lifestyle? I spoke to Anton about that, and he was like, maybe I'll go back to football hooliganism, but he was like, I want to travel, I want to see Europe. He was meant to be traveling Europe right now. So Anton goes around Europe. Anton, again, the main guy in Hood's clan, the main character of our story, he goes around Europe to like anti-fascist conferences and explains, you know, situation in the East. Previously, he fought in the East before in 2014, and he just goes around doing stuff like that. And, you know, he's got a big network of, you know, hardcore anti-fascist Europeans, old school anti-fascist Europeans, like the kind of shit that, to be honest, I kind of thought had died out a bit. But when I looked at it, I was like, okay, there is still like a quiet but very active element of that, just not on the fucking constant social media bullshit, which a lot of the other anti-fascists are, unfortunately. So that was cool to see him know. And yeah, man, so Anton, basically, he was like, oh, I want to go and travel. You know, he has a wife, not currently in the country, so I think, you know, they might join each other and move out, you know, move elsewhere. He said he was considering that kind of thing before, like maybe leaving Ukraine. He lived in Portugal for a year as a teenager, working as a labourer on a building site. So he's, you know, he's been around. He's a very, very intelligent guy. Just really, really a lovely guy. A very nice, a very stoic and very nice, but like genuinely nice person. But the kind of guy that, I won't go into it, but there was, basically, he will tell someone if he thinks they're full of shit, you know, or at least he'll just be like, no, I'm not even going to entertain it. And I really appreciated that. Very much with the Hoods Clan lads, it just felt like this is all very real. This is, they're not acting, they're quite the opposite. They were just completely being normal, like goofing off, like doing dumb shit. They weren't trying to be tough. So yeah, I really enjoyed that element of them. And honestly, it was very, very refreshing after, you know, spending quite a lot of time over the years with people that are trying to act tough or they don't know how to just be themselves, which is fine, you know, but it, you know, it's just like nice to film with that. Anyway, I'm rambling. Next question. How's the morale among the Hoods clan and the rest of the Ukrainian people after resisting more than 70 days? By the way, Slava Ukraina. Cool. Yeah, man. I mean, I guess I kind of answered that. Yeah, the morale's good. They're joking. They're making jokes. One of them, like, you see it in the doc, he was joking. He's like, I think he said, like, what are you doing to prepare for the East? Because that's where they're headed next. Some of them are already there. And one of them's like, we're taking steroids, we got to get tough, we got to lift up our RPGs, we got to look cool, you know, like just fucking goofing off. I mean, I presume he was joking. I very much doubt they're on fucking steroids right now. You know what I mean? It's like hard enough to get diesel, let alone steroids. And they certainly, you know, I mean, they're big lads, but they didn't scream fucking steroid users to me. But yeah, so that kind of camaraderie. The real nice thing about it was like they're very clearly all friends. Like the group we're with, they've all been friends for like 10 years. So that was cool to see, you know, when you could just tell, like, just the way they talk to each other, the way they interact with each other, just nice to see their pals, you know, their bros, not just a unit that's been put together for, you know, practical purposes, like they're actually bros, like, and that was really nice to see. So yeah, the morale is good. Question, have they actively fought, and if yes, have they suffered casualties? Yeah, so they've got a few casualties, none dead yet, thank God. One got shelled, one got, I think maybe got shot, I think you maybe said, or damage from shrapnel. One of them, yeah, a few of them are on the front now. So they've got their unit in Kiev, which obviously they were in Kiev to, because that was where the action was, but now it's in the east. So they've got a couple of their lads in the east. The recent video people might have seen where via the side of the road, a guy takes out a Russian tank, or I think it's a Russian tank with an armored vehicle, whatever, with either an Enlaw or a Javelin, I can't fucking remember. That was one of the Hoods clan lads. So yeah, they're actively in frontline duties. You know, some of them are, some of them, and then the rest are just trying to join their pals. They've got a mortar unit, I believe, and the lads in Kiev are like the RPG unit guys, and just general, like, you know, what would you call it, like, you know, just general frontline troops. So yeah, so they've done that. Yeah, suffered a few casualties, but no one's dead yet, thank God. And I really fucking hope nothing bad happens to them, because they were just like good people, and they really believe in what they say. And I really like that they're kind of like, you've already probably seen a bit of it, there's like some fucking, no offense to Americans, but a lot of like online Americans are like, oh, these guys are not anti-fascist because they have a name, Hoods Clan, like, you know, stuff like that. And it's just like, man, like, what the fuck? Like, and these people, Hoods Clan, like, they're like, we don't give a shit about any of that stuff. They're very confident in who they are, secure in who they are, you know, militantly anti-fascist, been, you know, having serious fights with fascists for 10 years and longer. I mean, one of their members lost a kidney because, you know, they lost a fight, and then, well, they were winning the fight, and then some of the fascists pulled weapons and beat this guy on the ground so bad with a baton that he lost a kidney. So, you know, these guys have literally lost blood and tears and a kidney fighting anti-fascism. So the fact that some fucking, you know, someone on the internet is like, oh, you're not proper, it's like, who gives a fuck? Like, sorry, they didn't get the correct fucking words or whatever. Like, it's just, yeah, whatever, who cares? But yeah, they're very secure in what they're doing. It's cool to see. What is the level of their training experience like? What kind of equipment? One of them was posing with a javelin. Have there been tensions between? There's a lot of questions there, man. I'll just read the first couple. I don't know. Look, so the level of training is pretty good. They've been training this whole time. Anton and I think some of the others have fought in the East before in 2014. So they've been in war, you know, they've been training. Yeah, so that's good. But yeah, they're trading constantly. You know, I think they're ready. They've done, like, obviously they've been doing stuff as well. They're not, like, sitting around doing nothing. So they've been doing bits. Yeah, you know, they've been in Erpin, Bucha, I think, yeah, Borodanka. So yeah, they've been doing bits. The equipment they have is fine, but they always need more. Like, I'll be honest, they didn't say this, but I do think they're less likely to get the good equipment than, like, you know, one of the more established ultra-nationalist groups. Unfortunately, I just don't think they will get it. They won't be taken seriously, perhaps, as much by authorities. Not by the other units, but maybe by them too, but, you know, just by authorities. But I don't know. But Operation Solidarity, the kind of anti-authoritarian aid group, have really helped them. Anton even kind of shouted them out, was like, they've helped us. We interviewed Domain, the founder, Salem, and he was a cool guy, so they've all been helping. And then, how many known anarchist combat elements are there, and what are communists in Ukraine doing? Communists in Ukraine doing? Fuck knows, mate. I've not seen them doing anything. Probably pro-Russian, to be honest. I think the communists in Ukraine are probably in the east. I did read, actually, now you say I did, one of the anarchists sent me, like, something where the communist party in Ukraine was, or, like, one of the communist groups were just like, we just need peace, we're not on anyone's side. It's like, you know, it's fucking intellectual cowardice. But yeah, and how many anarchist combat elements? I don't really know what you mean by combat elements, but there's quite a lot. You know, there's hundreds of anarchist fighters and leftist and anti-fascist fighters. I was at the Resistance Committee base. They're kind of, you know, milling about. There's quite a lot of them there. Met an anarchist from Russia, met an anarchist from Belarus, people from all over, you know. And then I met some Revdia lads. It was funny, we went to a guard post with Hoods clan, and this lad that I'd interviewed in the original doc was just there. Like, I was like, no way, like, you know, it was great to see him. So we didn't film with him because he didn't want to, but yeah, it was great to see. It wasn't really the focus of our film, you know. This was a Hoods clan film. We're going to do a big film about the Resistance Committee, and I don't know, there's a lot of disorganization, a lot of confusion within their group at the minute, and obviously being, you know, hyper-political, they have to agree on this, that, and the other, so there are a lot of confusing things, confusing elements. I think Revdia wanted to do it, other groups didn't want to do it. Hoods clan, like, I hit up Anton, was like, look, these guys are kind of busy, you know, occupied with dealing with stuff. I really want to make a doc with you guys anyway, can we come? And he was like, yeah, fuck it, come. He's like, we don't need permission from them, sort of thing. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, because we're not, you know, they're filming, they've got their own unit within the Resistance Committee. You know, Hoods clan is like its own unit. Rev Deer is its own unit in a way. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, it's interesting. But generally, they get along. Like, you know, you could tell that they get along. Like, they met on the hill. They're like, yeah, what's happening? You know, and we had, like, a big group photo, and they were like, yeah, you guys come in, you know, sort of thing. So that was cool. You know, it's nice to see. But I think just Hoods clan are very much, like, determined to get to the east and all about the war, whereas I think, you know, the anarchists are more still kind of very hyper-political, which is, you know, fine, it's completely understandable. But I think that's just for Hoods clan, they're a bit like, look, we'll deal with that later, like, let's, we don't want to talk theory, we want to have a laugh. And I think with the Hoods clan lads, they're kind of like street guys, you know, and they're not really up for, they don't want to, I mean, who the fuck wants to debate theory all day, you know what I mean? Anton was telling me that someone interviewed him, and he was like asking about theory and anarchist theory, and he was just like, ugh, he's like, I'm just bored, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I can see that. Yeah, next question, what does an end to this war look like for them? Do they want the map of February 2022, or are they looking to bring back Crimea? If they do not, long term, they keep fighting. I mean, I really don't know. I didn't really ask that because I don't think I think that's so far away. Like, it's just, I don't know. I mean, no one expects to get Crimea back, really, I don't think. And I don't think anyone's getting the Donbass back. The end to the war, who knows, man? I don't think it's going to be February 2022, though. Lines, no way. Next question. Hey, just hoping you're safe, bro. Looking forward to what you've got cooking. Thank you, mate. Appreciate it. Next question. What are the guys' experience and level of training? Sorry, I've answered that. What would a Ukrainian victory look like to them? Kind of answered that. Lastly, would they remain in the armed forces after the conflict ends? I don't think so. They're all like, you know, they're barbers. One works in social media. Anton worked in a club, and he wants to travel the world, you know, stuff like that. I don't think they will. They're not like, they don't really want it. They like fighting, but they're not like, you know, they're patriotic, but they're certainly not nationalist. You know, they're not like I didn't hear any of them singing, like, you know, Ukrainian songs or anything like that. And they're very much just like, you know, Anton was like, I'm scared for my friends getting shelled. You know, very much that, like, local, this is why I'm fighting. I don't want my friends to get hurt. I don't want my family to get hurt. Not like, you know, we will bring Ukraine to her former glory. You know, not that kind of talk, you know. So I very much doubt that they would stay in the armed forces. Maybe some of them will find that, like, I'm good at this. This is my calling, and they will. But I just think they'll probably go back to their life, you know. And they were all kind of, like, wanting to go back to training, like, as in, like, gym. And they will do combat sports, obviously. So, you know, I think they wanted to go back to, you know, Muay Thai and MMA. They'd opened up a gym, actually, before the war. Like, Hood's Clan kind of, like, gym where they did combat sports. And yeah, it's like they were kind of gutted that they had to shut it for the moment. So I think they'll probably go back to that. Last question. Do any of the folks in the Hutsuds clan or Revdia have families, girlfriends, boyfriends, spouse, kids? Anton, he talks about it. I'll talk about Anton because he was, you know, open to talk about it on camera. I know some of the others do, but Anton has a wife, you know. He's very, you know, you'll see on his social media sometimes, posts up pictures with her. He very clearly misses her a lot. You know, we were doing an interview and he's like, I was like, how is she? He's like, I don't know, I need to get back to her today. She's been messing me like mad, like I need to reply to her. I was like, oh, you know, it's very sweet. You know, they're young, married, and it's, you know, it's just, she's out of the country. He was like, right, I have a friend here, you need to get out of the country, you know, which is, you know, really sweet. He was like, we need to get you out and then I'm going to go and fight. Very interesting, very, you know, brave and kind of, I think, commendable, you know, looking after his family like that. I don't think any of them have kids, though. But, yeah, it was... they're all really quite young, you know. They're, like, 28 sort of age. Anton's a little bit older, though. He's in his 30s, but the rest of them are, like, you know, pretty young. But, yeah, man, they've all got family. Constantine, you'll see him. We interviewed him quite a lot. He's at the start of the trailer saying, you know, we're all anti-racist. He was talking a lot about his mother, but off-camera, you know. Like, certain things people don't want to talk about on camera, you know. But we were talking the whole time, and he was, like, really, you know, missed his mother and very worried about his mum. She was near Bucha, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, really sweet guys, normal people, you know, as it is. Last question. How do you feel about them going out to fight, as so many have chosen to seek refuge elsewhere? Oh, how do they feel? Sorry. How do they feel about going out to fight? I don't know what you mean. I can't remember if we got on camera, but, you know, one of them said, like, you know, not everybody has to fight in the front. You know, this is, we do want to. We want to fight in the front. I think they're fueled by rage, which you would be, and, you know, the will to protect their people. But, you know, they want to fight, and I'm sure there are other units, other people involved with them doing other stuff. You know, I know a lot of people. My friend, her boyfriend had, like, a heart problem, so we couldn't go on the front. Now he works in, like, the kind of IT ops side of things because he's good at computers, you know, helping the war effort. So there's loads of people doing their part. Obviously, you know, as a young man, you can't even leave the country unless you have a second passport, like a dual national thing. So I don't know how they feel about lads that try and leave. I don't really want to speak for them. I imagine, you know, it's a mixture of feelings. But yeah, man, it's, I don't know. Either way, good people. I've got, over the next 2 weeks, I'm going to try and get this doc hammered out. Yeah. Sorry if I sound a bit knackered. I am. I've been editing, like, all night. It's a lot to edit. We weren't even there that long, but it's just so much good content. It's like, how do I put this together properly? Anyway, thanks for everything. Cheers.